Hello and welcome to Ops and Hops, the podcast for those who like beer but have to work in tech to afford it. Today I've got Malcolm Matalka. He is the co-founder of TerraTeam, one of the wonderful Terraform tacos out there, Terraform automation collaboration software companies.
I think that's right.
Got it all. Yeah, I think we got it. So Malcolm, welcome to the show. What are you drinking and what made you choose it?
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me here, Derek. Happy to be here. So because I'm a sailor, I have had obligatorily to get into rum. So this is a Diplomático, which is a very nice, easy drinking. You can just drink it straight. You don't have to mix it. No rum and Cokes here, please, for Diplomático. It's a little bit above that. Now, I have committed a little bit of sacrilege. I put 2 ice cubes in there, but, you know, I want to last the whole podcast, you know?
It releases the flavor, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It releases the flavor.
Yeah.
Today, I've got a Solemn Oath. We're all misfits beer here. Solemn Oath is very close to me in Chicago. Decided to kick the IPAs to the curb for at least one show. I'm getting a little tired of them, to be honest.
And that's honestly, a dark looking beer from here too.
Yeah, it's really, really smooth. Really chill. I believe it's a porter. Got some holiday spices going on. Honestly, it's not bad. Nice and festive.
Tis the season.
Absolutely. So anyway, Malcolm, you said you are a sailor. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so like a lot of people during COVID, I spent a lot of time on YouTube, and YouTube decided to start showing me sailing videos, which I'd always had this idea in the back of my head, like, oh, it'd be cool to just be on a sailboat and travel around. But I didn't really do any research beyond that, and I thought it was kind of ridiculous. But there's all these people on YouTube that live on a boat, they're traveling around, visiting different places, and I was like, that's cool. So I set up a 3-year plan to sell all my stuff, find a boat to buy it, and move on to it. And I pretty much hit that mark. So March of 2023, I moved on to a boat that I bought in the Caribbean, and I've been mostly there. I come back and forth to my home in Europe as well, but mostly I'm on the boat.
That's fantastic. And I mean, I remember just living in Boston, I think it was 2016 or so. I was already hearing about people who were moving on boats because it was so expensive just to rent that they're actually living cheaper just living on a boat in the marina. But of course, a little colder than the Caribbean.
Yep. It's so that aspect is actually kind of interesting because there, as you know, we're called cruisers, and we just like to go around, see different places. You stay there for a little while, then you move on to the next place. But there's also a subset of people who just buy boats and live on them, and a lot of places aren't so into those people because as cruisers, we end up spending money at the places we go because it's sort of like a tourist experience. But a lot of people just living on their boats are just living there, living pretty cheap. And they become, some people think they become kind of a nuisance. And that ends up sort of having sort of a tangle with us other people that look the same from the outside, but we're just here for a totally different purpose.
Right. Yeah, no, I can see that. I used to live in a port city down in South Georgia, and you could definitely tell the difference. One of them was going to the bar every day, and the other was taking a bath in the sink. But
yeah.
But we don't have to dive into that too much. We might get a political firestorm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, maybe a little bit. But I think my timing ended up working out really, really well because one of the things that makes this possible for me is Starlink exists now. And I could tether off my cell phone, and the cell phone coverage in the Caribbean is pretty good. It's not amazing, but it's pretty good. But it is like the latency is pretty high and the connection speeds can be slow. And Starlink just totally makes that a non-issue. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's huge. I just started looking at Starlink the other day for no reason other than I think it hit the news, you know, whatever, for some new thing. And I was just like, oh, I kind of wonder how much this is. And You know, honestly, like nowhere near as expensive as I thought it could be.
Yep.
I know, like, you know, the Marines, like, you know, a couple grand a month or something like that. But I've definitely installed satellite systems in rural areas that were that much or more for like 512K or something like
that. Oh, yeah.
Like just absolutely staggering how bad it was back then. And now we've got a lot of opportunity to help so many people in rural areas who don't want to get on the grid and don't want to be subject to that nightmare. So it's good to see.
Yeah, one thing that's pretty nice too is at least when I got my setup, they the subscription fee depends on where your address is. So if you're living in the Caribbean, you're a local there, you actually pay less than somebody living in a city like Boston or something like that. So they rate it depending on sort of the average income of that country.
Oh, well, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, opinions of Elon aside, the technology is really, really great to have.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I like to say the word game changer because I think it sounds really lame because, you know, everything's a game changer for someone. But at least for my situation, it really is a game changer. It makes things possible that weren't before.
And it disrupted everything.
Yeah. And well, I mean, I can go out where I'm not near land at all and still have internet. I can go on a multi-day passage where I don't have any cell service and still work.
How recently did you switch over to Starlink from cellular?
June.
So okay, you have experienced both.
Yeah, yeah. So I was there starting in March. So I had a few months just on the cell phone and then switched over. And you can immediately tell like the latency is better, just the experience better overall.
Yeah, I use GitHub Codespaces a lot. You know, of course, that's a remote terminal. And just like sitting at a coffee shop sometimes, I'm typing and all of a sudden nothing will show up on the screen. Yeah. You got to wait for a little bit for everything to catch up. So I can't imagine using a cell phone in the ocean trying to get that to work.
Oh, yeah. I do feel kind of like that comedy sketch, though, where they're talking about I forget who it is, but he's talking about how someone's freaking out on an airplane because the Wi-Fi doesn't work. And he's like, you realize this took like a whole family's worth of lives to make it across from Boston to LA back in the day. And it took like 6 months. Right. And I'm like, yeah, like I understand that, but you know, the Starlink's way better than a cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I used to love thinking, you know, you'd sit there and you get like, you order food and they get behind, or you send like a really dumb text and all of a sudden somebody didn't get it. It's like, yeah, that went to space before it made it down here.
Yep.
It's kind of like, oh, right. You start thinking about those types of things. So do you find, you know, you've been running this company. How long have you been running Terra Team?
We've been, me and my co-founder Josh have been working on this for a few years. We really only went live with it really seriously in 2023. And that's when we thought it was good enough to show the world and get people start using it for real. We're talking, it's December now, we're talking a whole year. And I've been in the Caribbean for most of that.
Yeah. I mean, that market's definitely been exploding lately. You know, for those who know me, I was at Spacelift before. So I've seen all of this, definitely seen some of the pains and stuff. I know Terra Team hits a pretty cool angle right now in that it's all within GitHub. So it's kind of comfortable
niche
for people to adopt really quickly. Instead of having to learn a new UI or set up a bunch of abstractions and stuff like that, kind of keeps you single pane of glass. But do you find that people still ask for a UI?
A little bit and I don't know if I should say this, but it's because GitHub has a sadly large number of outages, and sometimes those affect the webhooks that we have. And so sometimes it can, there can be a delay in how long it takes between trying to do something with us and it making it to us. And some people have said, hey, it'd be great to have a UI where I can just go in and click run this now.
Right. Yeah. No, that actually makes perfect sense. I think that would be super useful.
And our thesis is basically that when everything's going as it should, you should never have to leave GitHub to accomplish what you want. So everything is within the GitHub pull request. You can control the entire system from that. But we have actually released a UI this week the initial version is very alpha, so things are changing quickly, to try to get those things that don't make sense in a pull request. Like maybe you want to drift, for example.
Right.
Drift is something where, you know, you just want to run it periodically and see what's changed. And that's not a pull request you're doing. You want to be able to see that report. And things like audit trails, all those sorts of things are things that make a lot of sense in UI, and they're not part of your daily experience in doing Terraform changes. There's sort of something else that you want to do. And a UI makes a lot of sense, and we're not opposed to that at all.
Yeah, I know with other platforms and just, you know, simple GitLab setups and stuff like that, it's like so many times I've got to sit there and run empty commits just to trigger something.
Yep.
And it's just, although it may, you know, it makes sense in a way, it's not really intuitive to like grab the intern and say, hey, can you go run a bunch of empty commits to make this happen?
Yeah. It's a bad UX.
So, yeah, for sure. So working from the boat, do you find, you know, what's been your largest struggle other than like latency? Do you find, you know, time changes or weird things like that become quite an issue, or has it been mostly effortless aside from, you know, the occasional storm?
Oh, it's definitely not effortless. The we're between 5 and 6 hours apart now, where before me and my co-founder were in the same time zone. So that definitely has its struggles. Because I would say that one of the biggest issues is because I'm new to the boat and it needs a lot of work to get up to the point where it's really a pleasant place to live, is juggling the time between working on that and then working on the company. And, you know, you got to focus on the company because that's what's important. That's what allows me to live there. But it is sometimes I'm like, oh, I really want to work on this and finish that up, but got to do what pays the bills, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes you need to bail and release the bilge.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like one of the other struggles just during summer is it is hot, and productivity and hot are definitely inversely related.
I can definitely see that. Yeah, I'm from Southeast Georgia. I mean, we're next to one of the largest swamps in the U.S. and the Okefenokee Swamp. I mean, we're talking 98% humidity most days. It's
ouch,
brutal. But you can see why I stayed inside and coded instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I would say in total, it's a good experience.
That's awesome.
And yeah, there's been some challenge in sort of figuring out how to manage the time as best I can, but that's, I guess it's not a huge difference from, you know, like if you move into a new house that needs some work, you're still trying to work and get your house together.
Right. Is this, is it sale? Is it power? Is it a little bit of both? How often do you do both? Or?
So I've got a sailboat. It's a 39-foot Amel Sharkey from 1983. So it's called a Ketch. So it has two masts instead of one. Okay. Most sailboats you can think of, this ordered, the view in your head when you say sailboat to someone is usually a single mast. So it's got two. It's actually, so the Amel boats are known for being designed for, it's called like blue water cruising, which means going over oceans. So I have a long-term plan in the next 1 to 2 years to actually do a transatlantic, try to get the boat ready for that.
That's awesome.
I try to put up sails as much as possible, but it does have a diesel motor in it. Pretty much all sailboats also have a diesel motor, unless they're really small or maybe like a racing boat or something like that, just because you have to. When you're coming into a marina, for example, it's for that kind of boat, you really need either someone to tow you or use your motor.
Okay. And really curious, how many times have you squeezed something like tack or jibe into your comments of your code? Are you starting to squeeze sailing verbiage into your code? Because if you're not, I'd love to see it.
You know, I really actually should do that. I think, you know, instead of backlog grooming, you know, it's cleaning the bilge.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that a lot. The poop deck.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Little piece of trivia for you. How large do you think the largest boat that Christopher Columbus on his first voyage sailed to the U.S. was? How many feet long?
I'm afraid to answer this because you you ask me, and by you asking me, I feel like it's just this like obscenely low number or something, you know, like.
Yeah, like clearly like I'm asking because it's not feet, obvious, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like I want to say like 45 feet or something stupid like that.
Well, that's a good guess. It's around, I believe the number is around 60 feet for the longest, and then the shortest one, probably high 40s, something that's around wild. There. And as comparison, my boat, which feels small for even a single person, two people will be fine on it, but it still feels small, is 39 feet.
Is the Pinta the smallest one? Do we know?
I think the Santa Maria is the largest, and the Pinta sounds like it could be a small one.
Yeah, sounds pretty small, yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot's happened, obviously, in the past weeks, or has it been months?
I'm months, sure. Like 3 months now.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. August 10th.
So the BS license. The business source license. Some of us call it the BS license. Was added to Terraform, Vault, everything within within HashiCorp. This has happened before. You know, Elastic's done it. I believe Redis did it. A lot of other. Mm-hmm. Was it Redis?
Mongo? Yeah. I think. As well.
Mongo did it. And sometimes I kind of understand it because these are, you know, these are platforms with UIs and like all of this extra stuff that was done. They put a lot of work into it. And although I don't necessarily agree with it completely, I still have a little more empathy with them. But when you're talking about something, you know, like Terraform and the fact that it's just kind of like, maybe we don't like it. If you start making too much money, then we're mad at you. But until then, just pay $450 an hour to a lawyer to make sure that you're fine.
Yep.
So not a huge fan of that. Obviously, that came after you and Spacelift and Zero and all of these other players in the game. How are you dealing with that right now? How are you feeling?
Yeah. So I guess for a quick recap for the 2.5 people listening to this that don't know what happened is the license change – as you said, to the BS license, specifically, the language is very vague, and it says, and I'll focus on Terraform. They affected a lot of their products, but Terraform's the one that we care about at Terra Team, is you're not allowed to embed or host the binary if you're providing a service that competes with a service that HashiCorp provides. What any of that means is up to, I guess, HashiCorp's lawyers to decide before they sue you. And a reaction to that was to make OpenTofu, which is this amazing shirt you're wearing right now.
Yep.
Which is, so the license change only impacts versions of Terraform 1.6 and going forward. So all legacy ones are not impacted by it. So OpenTofu, a bunch of us got together, Spacelift, M0, ourselves, Gruntwork as well, and Scalar, got together and decided that what was best for both the community and, of course, ourselves, because we're also businesses. So there's, you know, we got to think of our business as well. But really the community, everything all together, when you look at the big picture, was to fork it and create OpenTofu, which is a Terraform fork, so it's compatible with Terraform. In the future, it's probably going to grow some stuff that maybe Terraform doesn't have. The goal is like to barnacles. Be backwards compatible. And things move really quickly, and OpenTofu actually got into Linux Foundation pretty fast. So means, unlike Terraform, which is owned by a single vendor, and a single vendor makes all the decisions, OpenTofu is controlled by a foundation, and part of the requirements of being part of that foundation is you have to guarantee that you're going to be open source, real open source, for the entire lifetime of the project. They will help you with the management, community governance, and all that. So the hope with OpenTofu is that the community is really involved in helping drive the features forward. One of the big complaints about the versions of Terraform before was that HashiCorp wasn't really responding to what the community was asking for. There was even pull requests that passed all tests and everything worked, and they just wouldn't get around to reviewing it and pulling it in.
Or they reviewed it and decided that it was against their better interests or did not align with this gigantic move that happened.
Yeah, that's another way to put it.
Yeah, no.
Now, what really grinds my gears about the license change is the language coming out of HashiCorp, and I've also seen it from people supporting HashiCorp on like Reddit and Hacker News, is calling us basically freeloaders.
Yeah. I've seen that and not a fan. Not a fan at all.
And I think, so of course, HashiCorp has every legal right to relicense the work. They have, well, with the caveat that I don't know if every single line of code in Terraform was actually copyright CLA'd, because they didn't necessarily start that as soon, but let's assume it is. So with that caveat, they don't really have the social contract. Think of open source as a social contract. They violated that in this process. But to come out and say we have freeloaders for our open source project, it's like, no, the definition of open source means freeloaders don't exist. That's the point.
Right.
There's no such thing as a freeloader in open source project.
Yep, 100% agree. I mean, so many people are doing work for this. And I think one of the biggest arguments I saw in support of the open source side and the and OpenTofu and everything else is, unlike Elastic and, well, kind of, and several of the others that have kind of made these big changes, Terraform is run by the providers. Mm-hmm. Those providers are created by other people. I mean, Hashi manages a few of them, but overall, these providers are created by other people. I mean, you've got Anton Babinko out there writing all of these modules and doing all of this. That stuff is what makes Terraform run. The community makes Terraform run. It's, you know, the base code is an abstraction. It's an API. It's not that complicated, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's great. It's done very well, and it caught fire quickly because CloudFormation is a dumpster fire, or was it's gotten better, but it's definitely got its rough edges. And, you know, Terraform hit it just the right time. It, you know, in my opinion, it could have been anybody.
Yeah. And I think if you stand back a little bit and think, all right, what really is Terraform, the CLI? Well, you have a language and you run the CLI against it and you get an artifact out the other end, and it, you know, infrastructure in this case. So that is basically a compiler. And I can't imagine anyone in 2023 going back to paid compilers. Like, who's going to pay for a Java C at this point?
Yeah.
And Terraform's the same thing in this case. Really, the value, like the reason compilers, one of the reasons compilers are free is because they depend on the community to build these libraries and be able to use it without having to worry about if there's a license issue or anything, and embed it, you get more libraries, more people using it, all that. And I don't know if HashiCorp sees it that way or they understand it that way. I personally think it's a poor long-term view to not see it as Terraform is this community thing that benefits from a community that's free to use it without anyone having to check with their lawyers before they integrate it.
Right. Yeah. My idea was always, so if you have a company that has multiple business units, and of course enterprises get very complicated like this, you know, they are in the same company, but they still pay each other. Mm-hmm. You know, money still exchanges hands between these business units, and, you know, it could be, you know, the European unit needs to pay for engineering that the American unit did. Like, this kind of stuff happens all the time, and they actually have budgetary stuff. So if the American unit develops a GitHub Action using Terraform that they then sell to the European unit, same company, I mean, is this something that they have to think about? Because it is a direct competitor. That is something that was built, charged, and sold and competed against Terraform Cloud. So I think that's always been something that just got so hairy
that
I didn't like it at all. I don't know. I mean, sure, if you got enough lawyers on retainer, I guess it's fine.
But, yeah, it's still friction though, right? Like, aren't we supposed to, good businesses are trying to reduce friction.
Right. So that's always been kind of my thing. And, or if I went and created a bunch of, or a new Terraform provider and sold it because it enabled a bunch of stuff. Yeah, I needed a bunch of work. I needed to have that provider covered. Is that right under the license? Can you sell a provider? Can you sell modules? Can I sell a course that does labs of Terraform? You know, there's all of this stuff that I know they're never coming after me because God knows I don't make enough money for them to care. But, you know, if I got really successful or something, who knows? They might say, you know, actually, you're using our product and we want people to buy our training instead.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say there are some foundations out there that do get a little weird about that. Working at Linux Academy, we have actually been, well, I say we, it doesn't even exist anymore, but they were chased down by some major foundations out there that had their own training.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, sorry, you know, these are our products. It's our training. Linux Academy fought back and won, but
yeah. I mean, just imagine too, if you're a company that's trying to get acquired and you're using Terraform, mm-hmm. that, so even if it is a non-issue, now it's a negotiation strategy where the other company can say, well, we're not really sure about this. Maybe we need to knock off like a 10 mil or something like that in case we get into hot water.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That makes, I actually haven't heard that argument yet, and that makes a lot of sense. I know, you know, the new business license, I think they just released that, or somebody just read it and saw that during their, you know, their quarterlies, they were talking about how the original open source license was a liability. And then now they've been able to remove that clause. That clause was actually in their quarterlies and then they just removed it. So I think that
I see.
Pretty much confirms how much pressure was coming from the top.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, there's also another talking point that both comes from HashiCorp and others that, oh, this doesn't really impact 99% of the users.
Ugh.
And I disagree with that in,
yeah.
So let's take a comparison. The year of the Linux desktop has been happening for 20 years now. And
<It's> not more.
But we, like, the world agreed, well, not the world, the US agreed that Microsoft was a monopoly and we should sue. And it wasn't because we didn't want grandmas and fathers and people less technical not using Windows. It was because we know monopolies aren't good and we want to do what we can to lessen that. Because when someone comes in a monopoly, they don't make better products. And this, I think, is a very similar case where the only people who can sell Terraform things is, first of all, unknown, but definitely not if you're selling something that competes with Terraform Cloud. And that does impact a lot of users because now if they want to run Terraform in a CI/CD, and they either have to build it themselves, which is a distraction, money, time, all that, or they have to get TFC, which may or may not do what they want.
Right, right.
Like us competitors don't have customers because, you know, we're abducting them before they go write the check to TFC. It's because they come to us and they say, hey, we for our use case, this is actually a better fit for us and we like it.
Right. And honestly, your platform stands out even more to me because you're so much different than TFC. In a way, you accomplish the same things, but you know, the interface is all through GitHub. It's just a completely different interface that a lot of people are way happier with because they want that single pane of glass with GitHub and stuff. They don't want to deal with another platform. And that's a very, very okay thing. And just the idea that, oh, sorry, no, actually you got to go through Terraform Cloud. It's kind of like, no.
Yeah, exactly. And part of, We're a small company and we don't want to be a billion-dollar company. We enjoy the niche we're in and we just want to have, mm-hmm. you know, pretty decent lives off that. So we try to make decisions that will, in our hope, be best for the customer. And so we don't want you using our UI just because, you know, studies say you'll pay more if you're stuck in the UI longer because you spend more time there or something like that. Like we're not trying to like get the attention of everyone. We want you to accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And somehow you got to get gas in the boat when you get stuck in the doldrums, right?
Exactly. Exactly. either that or you go mad.
Yeah. There's some literature history for everybody.
Yeah.
No, that's great. And I've been looking at the OpenTofu Slack for a while. I've been kind of lurking, honestly, way too busy with all sorts of other stuff to really follow it as much as I'd like, but I have been in there and it's definitely one of the more active Slacks. So a lot of people say this isn't going to catch fire. This isn't a big deal. It's just a couple whiny companies, but I will say that there are a lot of very, very motivated people who are working on this, and it looks, I've worked personally with some of them when I was at Spacelift, some of these guys, just awesome, awesome, awesome people and super hard workers and great programmers. So it's really exciting to see how far this thing's going to go. I know IBM, it was IBM, right? Yeah, IBM just came out with their Open Vault.
Yeah, well, I think at least what I saw is IBM is in the commits, but hasn't publicly said they're involved.
Okay, well, they definitely mentioned it at a conference. I'm trying to remember which conference it was, but they launched at a conference.
Yeah,
it's on YouTube, so it's enough for me to see it. I'm sure they're backtracking now. They're like, whoops. Shouldn't have done that.
Open Tofu, it has people working on it full work days, every work day. It's got a team that's growing. There are a lot of pledges. When Open Tofu happened, we had a manifesto where people could pledge, and those pledges are real. People are getting hired. Those seats are getting filled. So people are working hard on it. I know it's been, you know, like in the 3-month area since it was announced and all this happened. And the stable release is coming. There's actually, it's one of those things where, like, when you hear, oh, just fork this and you're done. There's actually infrastructure involved in sufficiently running Terraform, in particularly the registry.
Yep.
And Hashi updated their registry license that only the Terraform CLI is allowed to hit it. So we had to stand up all that we want to do in the long run anyways, because you don't want to be dependent on HashiCorp for that. But it did motivate having to do that. And that's just a non-trivial amount of work. So stuff is happening. It's coming. I don't think I can say dates or anything, but it's coming.
No, I saw
there is a date. There is a release date. So
Wojciech,
it's on the calendar.
Wojciech launched it on his LinkedIn. That's enough for me.
Yeah.
So I know that there's, I believe, something stable coming out in January is last I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is great. And overall, if you were to alias Open Tofu to Terraform, everything is expected to be the same pretty much on parity.
Yeah. Okay. There are things, of course, like if you do -- version, you're going to see OpenTofu. Well, so like all those things, but all your files are going to be in the same places because those are okay. Since we're, it's kind of like an API compatibility layer at that point. But everything is compatible with older versions of Terraform. And I believe with 1.6 as well.
Okay. Yeah. So the latest, I think we're missing right now, Terraform test, I believe.
Yeah.
And Terraform test, I'm trying to remember. I think there were a couple other things, but it seems like those were mostly cloud centric anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah. That's another thing where I think HashiCorp is sort of happy to confuse Terraform and Terraform Cloud when it suits the narrative. So Terraform, the CLI, that is totally different, and that is what OpenTofu is compatible with.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, they've been kind of working on that narrative for a little while. I do know that. I was a HashiCorp ambassador for a little while.
Okay.
So, and I mean, I still love a lot of the people at HashiCorp. Guys, please don't yell at me for like jumping on this bandwagon, but I'm sorry, this bandwagon is the direction I want to go. So, new courses will still cover Terraform. I'm not changing to OpenTofu, but if you want to alias to OpenTofu, absolutely get after it.
I'm really looking forward to the stable release. That's when Terra Team is going to officially support it as well. We've sort of been dabbling with the beta, but we don't want to put it in front of our customers until it's really ready.
Of course. No, that's awesome. That's great. Well, do you have anything else you'd like to cover? Got anything else resting up there?
No, I think we covered all the good stuff.
Nice. So when you go back to the boat?
In February. So I'm here just relaxing, enjoying land time for about 2 months.
Okay. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, Malcolm, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I am so glad we got to finally work out time to get that done. And if you've got anything else to say to the crowd, how should they find you?
Yep, come to terrateam.io. We are very focused on just Terraform OpenTofu on top of GitHub. We are a GitHub app that you install. All of our configuration is done inside the repository. You don't have to hit a UI at all to get up and going. Everything happens inside of your PR comments. We have a Slack. Join, talk to us, ask questions. We really value giving really, really good support. So we're very responsive there. We love to help people out. So please, at least come to the Slack and say hi.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. And I don't even know if I'm in there. I have to be. There's no way I'm not. I'll check. All right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. And Malcolm, if you give everybody a little bit of a cheers here, get that AI out of the way. There we go. Cheers, everybody. Cheers. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Derek.